Hi, we started a section in our series on money and finances regarding what it is that we are to do with the monies that God enables us to earn by our labors. And we saw how we are to labor, working with our hands the things that is good, not only so that our own needs might be provided for, but that we might have to give to others, to him that needeth. And so again, this is an expression of Christianity. God raises us up out of our own self-interest and our selfish concern and enables us to think about and care for and looked after others, and which again is a way of showing God's love as he's shown his love to us in coming to us in our greatest need, which was for his salvation. We looked last time from the Old Testament how there were various categories of needy persons that the tithes and offerings of the people were intended to meet the needs of. And I thought that would be a good starting point and outline. And as I looked at it, it did seem to carry through the entire Bible that you found these categories were basically what God would have us to be involved in as far as our Christian benevolences. Christian benevolences are some form of practical or material outreach in order to bring aid and assistance in the name of Christ to those who are in need or suffering, so that we might touch their lives with God's love and reach them with the gospel. And so this is very important. We ought to be looking out for these opportunities. And the first category I want to start with tonight is that the tithes and offerings of the people of God were to provide for the fatherless. And the fatherless, of course, would be what we may be more familiar with, the term of orphans. Orphans are children, minors, who had lost their parents and so did not have parents to look out for them and to provide for them. And the other category that goes along with this is that of widows. Widows, of course, were women who had lost their husbands. And, of course, the biblical guideline for family is that the husband be the provider and protector. And when the husband is gone, the widow is left without that care that the husband was providing. And one other thing, when you talk about widows and orphans, these were both created by death, most normally. But we're not talking here about women alone or children without parents. That's the result of either divorce or of immorality. These are artificial situations that are the result of sin. We have all kinds of children that we call latchkey children without proper parental care. Why? They never had a home with two married parents. And you have a man come along, gets a woman pregnant at some point, walks out of the picture, and there they are. They've been abandoned, but in a sense, they never really had a true marriage or family, either husband-wife or parent relationship, other than in a circumstantial or biological sense. And so a widow or orphan is a young child who has lost its parents by death, or a woman was lost her husband by death and does not have grown children to provide for her. So these are true needs and people that we ought to be looking out for. And this is an expression of God's own heart and character. God says that He is the God, in a special sense, of the fatherless and of the widows. If you'll turn with me to Psalms. And where I want to go is Psalm 10. Verse 14. Why would God call Himself the God of the fatherless and the widow? Because God, in a special way, takes them on as His responsibility and looks after them and cares for them and provides for them and protects them because they are helpless, humanly speaking, and are left in a very needy and dependent condition, and God steps in to fill that need. Psalm 10:14 says, "Thou hast seen it, for thou beholdest mischief and spite, to requite it with thy hand. The poor committeth himself unto thee. Thou art the helper of the fatherless." So He gives the word poor in a general sense, and then He gives a specific example of what one of those poor are, a fatherless child. And normally that does lead to poverty. Now, some of us have seen those really sad pictures of orphan children in foreign countries. They're in the streets eating whatever they can find in garbage dumps or among the food that's given to animals. And normally the animals are cared for better than they are. And there are just multiplied millions of these kind of children around the world. And yet, God knows about them. Notice verse 17. Lord, Thou hast heard the desire of the humble. Thou wilt prepare their heart. Thou wilt cause Thine ear to hear. All right, what does God hear? What does He do? He says, to judge the fatherless and the oppressed. Right? We saw that the oppressed, one prime example of that is the fatherless. The poor. Now we have the oppressed, those who are being abused and taken advantage of, those who are being crushed by those who have more power than they. And one prime example of that are the fatherless. No one to protect them. Too young to fend for themselves. They're quite defenseless and very vulnerable and easily taken advantage of, that the man of the earth may no more oppress. Psalm 68 and verse 5. Here's what it says about God. He's a father of the fatherless and a judge of the widows. Is God in His holy habitation. So what is God doing in heaven? Well, here's two of His characteristics and two of His main works that He's involved in. He's a father to the fatherless. He takes that place in their lives. Then He's a judge for the widows. Now, widows were very often robbed and plundered and taken advantage of because, again, they couldn't protect themselves. And even in legal actions, they were often taken advantage of through the channels of government. People would take them to court and take whatever had been left to them, and they couldn't stop it. So God judges in their behalf when the judges of the earth were not doing that as they should have. And again, you remember Jesus talked about the widow who went to the unjust judge begging for her rights, and He finally relented and gave it to her. And God is saying that He judges in the heaven, and He's a higher judge than earthly judges. You know, even though earthly judges might be in cahoots with wicked religious leaders who would devour widows' houses, God would judge them. God is a father of the fatherless, judge of the widows. Another place is Hosea 14 and verse 3. Hosea 14 Asher shall not save us. We will not ride upon horses, neither will we say any more to the work of our hands, ye are our gods. This is a confession of someone who's been converted from their sin and idolatry. Now, why do they turn to God and away from their false confidences? For in thee the fatherless findeth mercy. Well, they very often cannot find mercy at the hands of men or human institutions, but at the hands of God. In God they can find mercy. In other words, He will pity and help them in their desperate condition. God is the helper and the defender of the orphan and the widow. Let's look at this again, Exodus 21. Let's see some specific examples of it. Exodus 22, verse 21 is where I want to be. Here's what God tells His people. Thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Ye shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. My God sets down here a prohibition. No afflicting in any way, any widow or fatherless child. If thou afflict them in any wise, right, if you violate this command, and they cry it all unto me, or they have nowhere else to go, they have to turn to God, because He's the only one who will hear them, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows. Are you going to take advantage of the widow? I'll make your wife a widow in judgment, and your children fatherless. You're going to afflict the fatherless? Your children will be fatherless. In other words, He would deal with very severely with them. It was a capital offense. He's very careful to protect the fatherless and the widow, and of course the stranger too. Psalm 146. And verse 9. The Lord preserveth the strangers. He relieveth the fatherless and widow. Notice. He's the preserver of strangers, so we shouldn't try to destroy them where He preserves them. He relieves the fatherless and widow, so we certainly should not try to oppress and rob them. But the way of the wicked He turneth upside down. In other words, God would deal with those who wrong the ones that He has taken on as His special charge. And again, this is an expression of God's tenderness and loving care, that those who have the most need, He's the most careful for. Proverbs 23, verse 10. Remove not the old landmark, and enter not into the fields of the fatherless. All right? In other words, there are certain boundaries set up. You know, maybe a widow has her lands. Don't come in and take what belongs to that widow. Don't go into the fields of the fatherless. Don't say, well, their father's dead. They can't defend and protect their interests. You know, their property is easy pickings. Let's go and get what we want for ourselves. And then they can go without and we'll be enriched. Don't do that. For their Redeemer is mighty. God calls Himself their Redeemer. he shall plead their cause with thee. In other words, they have nobody to deal with those who wrong them, no one to stand up for them and take on their interests and to represent them and to help them. And so God says, I'll step in and I'll become their advocate. I'll plead their cause against you. One more. Zechariah chapter 7 and verse 10. He says here, well, he's telling the people of Israel to execute true judgment and show mercy and compassion every man to his brother. Then he shows some things that are opposite to that. And oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor. And let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. So again, he's speaking for the fatherless and widow and saying, don't harm them. Leave them alone. Don't wrong them or take advantage of them. Don't sin against them, because I will take that as being done against me, and I will deal with you for it should you do so. He's their helper and defender. So then what should we do? Well, God says that he takes care of these people, then I don't need to, do I? How does God take care of them? Does he rain manna from heaven? No, often he puts it on the hearts of his people to care for these people and to look out for them and to minister to them and to meet their needs. That's one main way God does it. In other words, God's people have the same concern and compassion God does, and they have this, that concern and compassion for the same ones God does. And so they're going to try to help them as God does. In other words, he would use us as his instruments in these things. We should meet the needs of poor orphans. Psalm 82, verse 3. Defend the poor and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and needy. Deliver the poor and needy. Rid them out of the hand of the wicked. Right? He's saying, you take care of them and defend them and provide for them. Jeremiah 49, verse 11. Here's what God tells us to do with our orphans. Leave thy fatherless children. I will preserve them alive. In other words, leave them with me, or leave them to me. I'll take care of them. And let thy widows trust in me. And again, who would God use to do this? Well, God is sovereign over the world, and in his providence, he can move in any heart, in many hearts, to help people in need. We see that all over the world. There are a lot of philanthropic and humanitarian organizations, and they are actively trying to alleviate some of this need and suffering in the world. And they're not necessarily all Christian, but if anyone ought to be used by God, whereas if he's saying, bring it to me, and we're his people, then they should come to us. We should certainly be involved in helping them. Job was. Look what Job had to say about himself in Job 29. Job 29, verse 12. because I delivered the poor that cried and the fatherless and him that had none to help him. Right, there's a great description of a fatherless child. He's poor because he has no one to provide, and also he has no one to help him. He's defenseless. He's without any earthly means. And yet Job says here, I delivered them when they cried out of their distress. In chapter 31, Job's arguing his integrity. And he says, you know, his friends were telling him, Job, the reason you're having all these troubles is because of the great sinner you are. And Job says, wait a minute. If I've been guilty of these things, yes, I should be judged. But I haven't done these things. And notice some of the examples of what he says he didn't do. Verse 16. If I have withheld the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail. In other words, the widow was looking to me with longing and expectation that I would help her, and I just let her keep looking and didn't do anything for her. He says, if I did that, or have eaten my morsel myself alone, and the fatherless hath not eaten thereof. In other words, when I sat down and eat, if when I sat down to eat, all I cared about was, I'm hungry, I want to make sure my belly's filled, and I never considered anything else. He said, I wouldn't sit down and eat myself until I had the orphan beside me that was without food to eat of mine. That's what he's saying there. For from my youth he was brought up with me as with a father, and I have guided her from my mother's womb. If I have seen any perish for want of clothing, or any poor without covering, if his loins have not blessed me, and if he were not worn with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the fatherless, in other words, if I did anything to make their condition worse, when I saw my help in the gate, and let mine arm fall from my shoulder blade, and my arm be broken from the bone. In other words, if I had ever done such a horrible thing, I certainly would deserve great judgment. So we are to meet the needs of poor orphans. We're also to meet the needs of desolate widows. Chapter 15 of Proverbs. Proverbs 15 and verse 25. It says that the Lord will destroy the house of the proud, but he will establish the border of the widow. And again, the border of the widow would be all that which is hers, that which was left to her by her departed husband, all her interests and all that she owned and had in this world. God would keep that strong and secure to her so that no one could invade it or take it from her. And so we should do the things that would strengthen the condition, you know, of the widow. You remember that the church did this in Acts chapter 6. What was one of the main concerns of the early church? That their widows were provided for. And what did they do about that? They gave them their daily necessities. That was the church's act. What are deacons? We talk about deacons. Deacons are those who look after the needs of those who are poor and suffering and destitute. That's one of their main ministries. And that's what the deacons were appointed to do. The elders evidently had started it, and they turned it over when deacons were first instituted in the church. It says, in those days, verse 1, when the number of the disciples was multiplied, right, with greater numbers, with greater needs, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews. In other words, there were some who were of Jews from among the Gentile nations. Others were Jews of Palestine. And these two groups were evidently at odds a little bit. over the way the food was being distributed. I think they're getting the first. I think they're getting the best. I think they're getting more than I am. And start having these little spats and disputes. It says it was because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. Well, if that's true, they had a legitimate problem. Maybe because this is taking place in Jerusalem, the local widows were getting more consideration than the ones that were of other cultures and lands. And so here you have a neglect. Every day, these widows were being taken care of and provided for in the church and by the church. And so they called the multitude of the disciples and the 12 apostles did and said, it's not reason that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. And so they had 7 deacons appointed to conduct this business. And we believe that as a result, everything was distributed fairly and properly. And actually, the church prospered as a result. There was a great increase of disciples. Why is that? Why would taking care of widows' daily food and other physical, material necessities result in a big revival in the church and a great ingathering of souls? Well, one, the apostles were set free to devote themselves completely to preaching and teaching. Two, a dispute in the church was ironed out. And three, God was pleased with a church that looked after the poor widows, and he blessed them. That was a great testimony, and it was resulted in many souls saved. If we're doing what God wants, he's with us and blessing our ministry, and that's one reason they were blessed. Paul made arrangements for this in 1 Timothy. And again, we're talking here on a church level. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Verse 3, it says, honor widows that are widows indeed. And this word honor carries the idea of financial provision, material provision. Verse 5, he says, now she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. And what a treasure someone like that is to a church. Someone that's praying constantly. And, you know, a godly older widow woman. You can go down to verse 9. It says, let not a widow be taken into the number or placed upon the rolls of those who are to be provided for. Under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted. Notice, relieve a widow who herself, when she was able, was relieving the afflicted. And taking care of children and strangers. If she have diligently followed every good work. Boy, what a great testimony. How would you like to have a life like that when you reach old age? You'd be able to look back and say, that was my life of service to Christ. You go down to verse 16, it says, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. In other words, the church is to relieve by providing for true widows. They have no one else that they can look to or fall back on for their provision. That's the church's responsibility. How's your Christianity? What do you mean, how's my Christianity? Well, I'd like you to test it based on James chapter 1, verse 27. There are those who seem to be religious, and yet they do not control their tongue. Well, that's a person that deceives his own heart. and his religion, whatever else it may consist of, is actually vain. It's empty. It's nothing. So then what is religion if it isn't just claiming to be religious or seeming to be religious? What is actual religiousness? Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father. All right, here's God's estimate of true religion. It's this. I like it. He's being very specific. This is what it is: to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. All right? Purity from the world and its contagion, its defilement. And then visiting fatherless and widows. When? When you have nothing else to do and it's a nice day? No, in their affliction. In other words, if you know of an orphan or a widow that's in affliction, we need to go visit them. What's that mean? Do I go knock on the door and say, "Hi, I thought I'd come down and chat with you a little bit and have a little visit and go home again"? No, the word "visit" here has a much wider and stronger meaning than that. Yes, we should go to them. We don't send them a gift in the mail, unless that's the only way we can get it to them. We go to them. The word "visit" here means to help and to aid and to relieve and to provide or defend or anything else we can do for the orphans and widows to bring them help in their affliction. Or is they're afflicted? That affliction consists of something. Maybe they are without adequate money or food or housing or clothes. They may be under attack, or who knows what that affliction may be. We go to them to help them and to take care of them in that affliction. That's true religion. That's what we mean by the word "visit." If you notice in the Bible, God is often said to visit men. And he does it in one of two ways, either in judgment. And that's probably the more common meaning. You'll read God visited someone's sins upon them, meaning he judged them for their sins. Or he visits them in mercy and blessing. And that's what this word is talking about. We need to, in obedience to God, and as his representative, and as his instrument, we need to go to those who are in affliction, and primarily those who have no one else to look to, the fatherless and widow, and then help them. Let's look at a couple examples where "visit" is used in that way, and then we'll close. Ruth 1:6. Ruth. You remember how Naomi and her husband Elimelech and their two sons left Israel and went to the country of Moab because of a famine? And while she was there, her husband and her sons all died. Her sons had married, so she had two daughters-in-law, and all three were now widows. And then it's verse 6, it says, "Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people in giving them bread." God didn't just stop and say, "Hi, how you doing? And let's have a little chat." God ended the famine and brought back crops to provide for his people and give them bread to eat. In other words, their needs were provided for. That's how God visited them. I notice 106 of Psalms and verse 4. "Remember me, O Lord, with the favor that thou bearest unto thy people." All right, do we ask God to help us and comfort us and provide for us and defend and protect us and all these things? Well, we need to be willing to see how we can do that for others too. Remember me, O Lord, with the favor that thou bearest unto thy people. O visit me with thy salvation. Now, God's salvation is primarily salvation from sin and hell, but his salvation comes in many forms. It can come in the form of provision when we are in need. It can come in the form of healing when we're sick. It can come in the form of comfort when we're sad and hurting. It can come in the form of protection when we're in danger. You know, God's salvation comes in many forms. And he visits us with that when he blesses us. And we need to be willing to say, Lord, help me to be of help. May I be an instrument of your salvation to those fatherless and widows who need that right now. How many fatherless and widows are blessing God today for you because God used you to bless them? So the first category we need to have to give to those in need are orphans and widows. And so may we always seek to be of help to those. Let's close in prayer. Lord.